IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I am your host, Saurabh Todi. I have with me Pranav today, and we would talk about the recent statement by the South Korean president on the possibility of the East Asian country acquiring nuclear weapons if the threats from its neighbor North Korea continue increasing. So let's jump into it. It's a very interesting and exciting counterfactual and development. So first, I'll give a brief background on South Korea and nuclear weapons. So in the 1970s, South Korea did have a nascent nuclear weapons program, which was then shut down with the US intervention. Until 1991, US did station nuclear warheads in South Korea at its Air Force base in Gyeongsang. But after the Cold War ended, these warheads were withdrawn. And the strategy or the policy of nuclear umbrella was implemented, where the US committed to extend its nuclear deterrence on Japan and South Korea while not having weapons on the soil of Japan and Korea. So since then, there's been like change in the public attitudes towards South Korean weapons. So first of all, there was a poll done by Chicago Council on Global Affairs in 2022, where 71% of South Koreans were in favor of deploying their own, or at least developing their own nuclear weapons. And thus, what is interesting is that although the current threat is directed towards like North Korea and its program, the same survey actually revealed that 50% or rather, more than 50% of respondents in South Korea believe that it will be China that would be a bigger threat than North Korea to South Korea's security 10 years from now. So earlier this month, during an interview, the South Korean President Yoon made the most explicit remark on the nuclear issue since a few years now. He stated that although the threat from North Korea is to South Korea, but it is not just limited to that and extends to both US and Japan. And he said that if the North Korean issue becomes more serious, South Korea would acquire its own nuclear weapons, such as deploying tactical nukes in order to counter the threat from North Korea. So, Pranav, this is a pretty big statement and quite an explicit one at that. So, what do you think would trigger such a decision by South Korea?
Yeah, thank you, Saurabh. It's great to be discussing this topic on this episode. Before we delve into what could trigger, we start to clarify that this is just a statement that has been made in a press conference where he was being asked, where the president was being asked questions. South Korea has not violated its nuclear non-proliferation treaty commitments. It is still very much within the NPT. It has not notified anyone that it's going to withdraw from the NPT. So this is very much in a sort of outlandish statement that is coming from a person and a person whose party has generally been more favorable towards the acquisition of nuclear weapons, especially in the past 10 years, right? So we should not take this statement as a statement of intent, but rather this rhetorical thought. Like, for example, what we have in India, right? In India, you have Rajnath Singh or anyone, or the late Manohar Parikar, who would say, I don't want NFU, something like that. So this is a rhetorical statement. It is supposed to create hype rather than sort of be a serious statement of it. But that being said, there are a couple of things that could trigger South Korea acquiring nuclear weapons. Now, consider acquiring nuclear weapons, because acquiring nuclear weapons itself would require it to either enrich uranium or reprocess plutonium, which currently it is not capable of doing in very, very large numbers on a scale that is required for nuclear weapons. There are two things that could trigger it. The first one is that North Korea, the DPRK, could become such a grave threat that Kim Jong-un starts fielding tactical nuclear weapons, which Kim Jong-un has stated that he will do. Kim Jong-un last year, especially, released a doctrine of sorts, or the North Korean nuclear posture review of sorts, where they said that they would start fielding tactical nuclear weapons at some point. So the fielding of tactical nuclear weapons would become such a grave threat, and that South Korea would feel that its major cities, including Seoul, Seoul is in direct vicinity of North Korean artillery, could be a major trigger point. So that is the first one, where the threat is so much that the South Korea has this intention to break out. The second, coupled with the first one, is regarding the US commitment. So once North Korea acquires nuclear weapons, the question then is, would the US wage a nuclear war just because a couple of tactical nuclear weapons were used against South Korea? And the answer is quite disturbing, because, you know, North Korea has ICBMs. North Korean ICBMs could be targeted against US cities. North Korea is developing bigger and bigger missiles, perhaps MIRV missiles, which could target Americans, right? And so the question is, would North Korean tactical nuclear weapons be a driver wedge between the US-South Korean alliance? And if it does drive a wedge, if South Koreans sincerely come to believe that US extended deterrence commitments cannot secure the country, then probably it could trigger a withdrawal from NPT and then start this whole process of acquiring nuclear weapons.
So that's interesting. So there has been some talks by non-proliferation experts saying that this could be just a bargaining chip by South Korea to, you know, extract more firm nuclear umbrella commitments from the US, like, let's say, US resuming having to keep some number of warheads on South Korean soil. Do you think that could be something that is a possibility, or that could be something that is more likely to happen than South Korea having its own nukes?
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation, because just to provide context, initially mentioned that US withdrew its tactical nuclear weapons. US withdrew its tactical nuclear weapons both from South Korea and Japan in 1991, after President George H.W. Bush offered this nuclear directive, where the US said, if you want to make the world more secure, then the first thing we have to do is remove all the land-based and naval-based tactical nuclear weapons. It was a unilateral measure to get the Soviets or the Russians to do the same, because Russia was crumbling rapidly. And there was a fear that Russian tactical nuclear weapons could fall into the wrong hands. So this US move, unilateral move, was supposed to trigger this norm where Russia would do the same thing. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Russian tactical nuclear weapons are still on naval vessels, and they're on land, somewhat secure. I mean, fairly secure. That's what I've come to believe. So the action is, if North Korea has tactical nuclear weapons, and if South Korea wants guarantees saying, hey, look, to the US, they say, hey, look, we don't have any nuclear weapons. You know, we can't assume that you will launch ballistic missiles, or you will drop bombs, nuclear bombs on North Korea if they attack us. The best way to secure it is to have it in close proximity with North Korea. And it is possible. Remember, US has tactical nuclear weapons in countries like Turkey, where Turkey has, although Turkey is a NATO ally, Turkey has proven to be a much less reliable ally within the NATO system than most of the other countries, whether it's Norway or Germany. Turkey was quite turbulent, and there were some concerns that the US should just withdraw nuclear weapons, their B-61s, from Turkey, right? So perhaps in the future, the US could say the North Korean threat is so massive that we would have to station nuclear weapons in South Korea. It is possible. And then Japan would demand the same, because Japan would feel that the US extended deterrence commitments should be strengthened only by keeping nuclear weapons in Japanese soil. So that could also trigger that. So within Southeast Asia, you could have US deploying tactical nuclear weapons both in South Korea and in Japan.
That's interesting and also a bit concerning. So let's do this, you know, a thought experiment, and which is a bit risky move given that, you know, we don't know what will happen. But let's assume that either of the two scenarios you laid out did play out, and South Korea did at least announce that they are developing their own nuclear weapons. And I think there have been experts who say that once they make that decision, it would take a few months to a year or so for South Korea to at least have a nuclear weapon. So let's say that happens. What would be the consequence first to the global nuclear non-proliferation order? Because South Korea doing that would imply that it has to violate the NPT. And once they have the like nukes, then I am guessing that they would also have to test it to establish its credibility. Then that itself opens up new like concerns. And then what would be the consequence regionally, you know, to Japan, China? I mean, we saw that even deployment of a THAAD missile defense system in, if I'm not wrong, 2016, a significant pushback from China. So how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I think the assessment that South Korea could acquire nuclear weapons in 6 months to 1 year is being extremely generous. It would take much, much longer for them to acquire those capabilities. And second, I don't think they would violate the NPT. First, they would provide a notification to withdraw within 6 months, and then they would go about the process. And unlike North Korea, what North Korea did was they had a clandestine program, and just before they were assembling their weapon, they withdrew from the NPT. So what North Korea did was a violation of the NPT in principle. And I don't know if South Korea would do the same, right? But that being said, South Korea actually has somewhat of a nuclear capability, except without nuclear weapons. They have submarine-launched ballistic missiles. They have ballistic missiles, the Haimun series, that could reach North Korean soil. And they have the F-35s that are designed or could be modified to drop nuclear bombs, right? So South Korea actually has a nuclear capability without the actual nuclear weapons. So they have all the delivery means necessary to satisfy a nuclear deterrent.
So in this case, it seems that, I mean, they have the delivery capability, but to be able to miniaturize a warhead is their main concern, right? Which would then take, so you think it would take like a few years or?
At least more than 1 year. You know, they can't do it within, okay. They can't do it within the NPT. So they have to withdraw from the NPT. And once they withdraw from the NPT, reprocessing plutonium or enriching uranium would get much, much more difficult because they would probably come under a lot of scrutiny from the US. So it's a dilemma for them. They pursue a clandestine program and they're essentially violating the NPT. They don't pursue a clandestine program and they're under pressure to stop their entire nuclear program. That's a dilemma. But let's just assume that they get nuclear weapons. Let's assume South Korea gets nuclear weapons and let's think about what will happen. South Korea gets nuclear weapons, even though South Korea and Japan are within the same alliance and partnership framework. Historically, the two countries have had sour relations. And even now, you know, within South Korea, Japan's militarization brings up very, very bad memories of World War II. And Japan also has some concerns because it might have concerns that this is a resurgence and this might be sort of South Korean way of sort of reclaiming the wrongs or making sure that the wrongs are done right, historically speaking. So Japan would probably also sprint towards nuclear capability. And for Japan, it's much, much easier because they are sitting on a very, very large stockpile of plutonium. So it's far easier for Japan to break, to sort of spring to a nuclear bomb than what it is possible for South Korea. So Japan would probably also have nuclear capabilities. And that would completely undermine U.S. extended deterrence, right? Because the whole the U.S. extended deterrence or U.S. nuclear umbrella project was set up so that countries like West Germany, Norway, South Korea, Japan, and Turkey don't get nuclear weapons. They did not succeed with the French because the French anyway believed that the US won't come to their help. And they also had some prestige element. So it would completely undermine the US nuclear deterrence. US not extended nuclear deterrence, right? And I really cannot go further in my imagination because it would trigger such an aggressive arms race. Because in that small vicinity itself, you have North Korea nuclear, South Korea nuclear, Japan nuclear, China nuclear, Russia nuclear. Because Russia and Japan also have a dispute over territorial waters and islands. And that itself would make things a lot more difficult. And it would destabilize the entire region where, you know, extended, you know, just to say this, there was a scholar named Kenneth Waltz. He's considered to be the father of the realism school, of the neoclassical, neorealism school. And he had this very, very interesting theory that if more countries get nuclear weapons, the world would be more stable. But that was assuming that all countries assume that nuclear weapons will function within the same deterrence formula. But given the asymmetry in capabilities between Russia, China, Japan, and South Korea, the arms race would be very, very asymmetric. And asymmetric arms races are always destabilizing. So all I could say is that it would destabilize the entire region. It would break down the nuclear order because it would undermine this entire American project of making sure that countries don't acquire nuclear weapons by providing security guarantees. And once that assurance is broken, it is very difficult for countries to convince countries to stay within the NPT regime. And it would undermine the disarmament. It would undermine the complete disarmament movement because the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, TPNW, is sort of gaining momentum. Even though it has no teeth, it's gaining momentum. So if any of these countries acquire nuclear weapons, especially South Korea or Japan, then you make the cards crumble. The entire effort of TPNW will just crumble like a house of cards.
I think it also then would, incentive, but at least will remove any restriction, let's say, from Iran acquiring nuclear weapons or even like Saudi. So, I mean, this is, we just like start like a chain, like domino effect, which we don't know where it will stop. So it's a huge risk. And it's quite clear like why it would be very important for the US to ensure that its extended deterrence policy does not fail when it comes to South Korea or Japan. So let's see. So then, I mean, it seems like, I mean, it is a very big deal that South Korea would acquire nukes. So, I mean, it does make sense that there will be an extreme effort to make sure that that doesn't happen because if you just start an arms race, which will see no end. So, alternatively, do you see that, for example, we see, what are the alternate arrangements do you think would work instead? So, we have first talked about, you know, like rebasing the U.S. tactical nukes on the soil of Japan and South Korea. In terms of, you know, like, so there has been some interest in Japan. The Japanese minister, Konotaro, he expressed his interest that Japan should acquire nuclear power submarines. So is this one possibility, like one consequence that do you think this happening? And then if this happens, then I am guessing that also put some pressure on South Korea to acquire this capability as well. Do you think this is more likely than having nuclear weapons? And do you think, I mean, given that, I mean, for Australia, you can understand because if they're trying to patrol like their waters and all, that's different. But if it is the case with Japan and South Korea, where adversaries are more nearby, does it make sense for them to have nuclear powered submarines? And is it more likely than not to for this to happen, especially given like that Australia has been allowed this exemption under AUKUS?
I don't know whether nuclear-powered submarines will trigger any sort of concern, right? Because given that the region where they operate, for example, you know, in the south, within the Korean Peninsula or the East China Sea, having, you know, nuclear-powered submarines doesn't make a lot of sense because your diesel-electric fuel cell submarines themselves provide the range and even the silence because nuclear-powered submarines are actually a little bit, you know, depending on the design, nuclear-powered submarines are actually a little bit noisier than diesel-electric submarines. It depends on how you operate it. So I don't know. I mean, it's just a rhetorical thing again. Tactically speaking or operationally speaking, it is not a requirement. It is a requirement for Australia because Australia requires a longer ranges of operations, yeah, and so on. But for South Korea itself, it really doesn't make sense. Unless South Korea wants a global, or Japan wants global reach, then it is an overreach. But going back to that question of what would happen if US brings back tactical nuclear weapons to South Korea, I don't know how, I might be very wrong about this prediction, but if US does bring back tactical nuclear weapons, it might open up doors for some form of arms control arrangement with North Korea. Because if you examine North Korean statements very closely, North Korea always says, we want denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which is very different from the American approach or the South Korean approach or the Japanese approach, which is complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. So the language there is very different. And bringing back tactical nuclear weapons to South Korea itself would also threaten North Korea even more. And they might realize that this is an arms race out of control, and they might have some measures to sort of hold back their own nuclear program. Of course, China would also come into the picture, and China would want assurance that these tactical nuclear weapons are sort of dismantled, or they would also put pressure on North Korea to sort of ease its own nuclear program. And it would be very messy at the beginning, but over the long term, it might open a window for some form of risk reduction.
I mean, that makes sense. But I was thinking more in terms of, you know, like China's role here. I mean, obviously, it is not in China's own security to have any nukes in its neighborhood, right? So even if US has its tactical nukes in Japan and Korea, that also does put some, like, that also endangers Chinese security. And then if you go back to the question, that hypothetical of South Korea acquiring nukes, then China would also make, in addition to the crumbling of the US-led global non-proliferation order, even China would not want to have more states, at least in its neighborhood, to have nukes. So obviously having nukes is out of the question for China, like for its neighbors, but even tactical nukes, if Japan has their tactical nukes, even if they're US nukes on its soil, that does threaten Chinese security. So, do you see that, if North Korea becomes more aggressive, if you see Kim Jong-un's statements, they do indicate that, they're trying to develop this tactical nuclear capability, which they would want to deploy. So do you think an increased role for China here to maybe put some pressure on North Korea for arms control? Or do you think that China may not be as averse to US nukes being back in Japan or South Korea?
I think China has always played a very important role in the Korean Peninsula. And the US also recognizes the role that China historically has played, right? Now, you have been a part of, in your graduate school, you were a part of the six-party talks. And China had a very prominent role in those six-party talks. So, therefore, I believe that, U.S. tactical nuclear weapons in South Korean soil would put pressure on China to preserve the non-proliferation regime. And China has, even though China was not really big on NPT and non-proliferation in much of the 20th century, they have played a much greater role within the P5 process in starting from the late 2010s, right? So China would probably put pressure on North Korea to sort of reduce its rhetoric and in some extent halt, but rather freeze its rate of development of nuclear weapons. But I'm not really sure to what extent these pressures could go, because the statements that come out are very diplomatic or almost no information. For example, before the Panmunjom summit in 2018, Kim Jong-un actually went and met Xi Jinping, right? Before Kim Jong-un could meet Donald Trump or Moon Jae-in, he went and met Xi Jinping. So China would play an important role, but it's very difficult to tell what kind of a role they would play. But it is in Chinese interests also to make sure that North Korea's capabilities are sort of redressed to some extent.
Yeah, you're right. During the graduate school, we had this simulation of six-party talks. So, in that, it was very illuminating to see, you know, like the central role actually China plays in that region. So, I mean, it has to be, you know, like a combined effort, we would say, like of both China and USA. But at the same time, not to forget that, you know, like states have their own interests, and then it's only so much that South Korea or Japan and even Russia, you know, would just simply go by the line which is agreed upon by China or USA. So it's very interesting. It's a scary scenario, especially given that with the geopolitical flux, things are unstable anyways. And if you add nuclear weapons to it, does not make for a good mix. So all we can hope is that tensions cool down and we don't have to think about the possibility that there could be more countries with nuclear weapons, because that is going to be a very dangerous time. So that's the time we have, Pranav. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
It was really fun talking to you. And yeah, have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you everyone for joining us on All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.